watching New Sound Wave with your hosts, John DeLuna, Brian Kilby, XV, Lady Rick, Bweebum, with Rob Springer.
Hey, everybody, it's your old friend, John DeLuna. It is New Sound Wave 85. I'm going to put it out there that not next week, but the week after that will be our big relaunch of the show. So enjoy the stripped-down classic New Soundwave format for two more shows, and then we'll come live to you, live on tape probably, with a fancy schmancy show with graphics and other things. So get ready for that. In the meantime, like I said, this is New Soundwave 85. Joining me, Peter A Triple K A Bweebum. Yeah, that's right. That's right. XV giving me a funny face. Come on, I like that. Look at that.
I have no other face to give, John.
True. These are
true. You.
These are
true. You.
And new Rob. our favorite RAC, Rob.
Rob Clay.
Yes. How are you doing, Rob?
I'm not too bad. You know, it's the first time I've done this, so you know, technical stuff, but I'm getting there.
All right, that's okay. Well, you know what? We've been doing this for like a couple years now, and you would swear it's our first time every time.
Yeah.
So don't feel so bad. And then, like I said, in a couple weeks, this baby is going to get ramped up. But first, this week. This week is a good week for news, and we're going to keep New Soundwave kind of short and pithy and keep it snappy. So first up, the Wii U. A couple of interesting tidbits to discuss on the Wii U. First of all, EB Games Australia has listed the price for the Wii U in Australia at $598, which equals somewhere over $600 for a Wii U. It's not time to start panicking just yet, though. So Australian games and consoles are always a little bit more expensive than the U.S. Some reference for your... for your mind is the Australian Wii costs $400 and the 360 costs $650. So in the PS3, $700. So almost
That's about twice as much
As it ended up over here. So you can probably, I guess, surmise that the Wii U will cost $300-ish maybe when it comes out here. Still pretty pricey. And then the Wii U, of course, the Wii was the low-cost leader traditionally in this last generation. Mm-hmm. So now you're looking at a Nintendo console that's right up there in terms of price and expense as all the other ones. So for you guys, does this dampen your opinion of the Wii, or is this kind of what you expected when you first started hearing about it? Did you see dollar signs?
Well, the Wii itself started out at like $250, right?
Yes.
So if this does end up being around $300, that's not a great leap. And this seems to be doing quite a bit more technologically, so I think that's pretty much on par.
Yeah, it doesn't sound unreasonable for what all it looks like the system's going to do. My only concern is I do wonder if maybe Nintendo has underestimated exactly how good the low price of the Wii was for them in terms of, you know, getting it out there.
Absolutely. And here's another tidbit for you guys. So that price is apparently only going to include one controller. So when you go into the store, and or mom and dad go into the store, they're going to be faced with the immediate question of, do I need a second controller? And if you have more than one kid, the answer is going to be obviously yes. And as you guys have seen, the Wii U controller is quite a beast. In fact, it's so complicated. It was considered for a while by Nintendo that they considered it making it a portable gaming system all of its own. So we don't have, like, I don't think we have a price on the controller yet by itself, but it's not going to be cheap. It's not going to be cheap. And you're going to probably need one on day one in addition to your system and probably maybe a launch title or two. So
I can't see that an extra controller not being at least $100. There, right, I cannot see that.
Me right. either.
Yeah, but
Oh, after you.
No, go ahead, Rob.
Okay, I was just going to say, the only thing I'm thinking is that since they say that current Wii peripherals are going to be compatible, is what I heard last, I have a feeling we're going to see a lot of the early games be able to use those just so people can actually do multiplayer without a huge investment.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. At least that's what I'd be thinking of.
Yes, absolutely. Hey, Peter, do you have some thoughts?
Well, I just don't know. I mean, it seems as if it's like, okay, only one controller will be required, but I certainly hope that there's a way to definitely support more than one, right?
I mean, they say technically it's possible for the Wii U to support multiple Wii U controllers. They just plan on not asking their customers to buy multiple controllers, but yeah, that's just, I mean, that's not reasonable to say. we don't want you to buy another controller. Well,
that's money. One way to work around the problem of the extra controllers being super expensive.
Yes. So an interesting point of view, and we'll have to see. I think when we learn how much the controller is going to cost by itself, we'll get a real feel for how much money we're talking about on day one of the Wii U when it launches. But it looks like it's going to be pretty pricey when you start to think about it, start to add it up. Hey, real quick, Portal 2, very popular. It has sold 3 million copies to date. That is according to Valve's co-founder. Although he didn't really back up those numbers with, I don't know, sources. It's probably safe to say that he's more or less correct. So, yeah, a little tidbit for you guys. Portal 2 has sold 3 million units. The PS3 is, as we all know, a moderate success, I would say. Certainly not a dismal failure, but a moderate success in this generation of gaming. Well, the next PS3 may be coming sooner than you think. So, apparently, Sony will release not the PS4, but a slight upgrade to the PS3 in Japan, perhaps later this year. So the revision includes minor updates, such as dropping power consumption, so it's green. It's lighter by nearly a full pound. So
does that really matter in a console unit?
You know what? I don't know about you, but I like to do curls with my consoles.
So. I don't know about you, actually, but I like...
It's actually a disappointment, I guess.
Sometimes I like to put my consoles in my fanny pack and take them to my friend's house so I can play.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
you know, a pound is a lot.
Yeah. I mean, a pound, it is for what it... I mean, it is lighter, but yes, to your point, I'm gonna notice that exactly maybe twice.
I just don't see how that's really a selling point for
when you take it out of the box and when you chuck it over the balcony.
Yes.
Oh, it's
PSN meltdown.
Yeah,
I think that's really more of a selling point for Sony and the retailers, because I assume the less it weighs, you know, the less it's going to cost them to ship them.
But absolutely. So GameStop loves it, but we don't know what to make of that. Interesting stuff. So the PS Vita, the successor to the PSP, could be hitting in November, actually early November, actually November 4th. A website, shop2.net, is currently hosting pre-orders for both the 3G and the Wi-Fi versions of the PSP for November 4th. And according to GameSpot, the retailer claims that this date is from Sony. Now, no one has communicated release dates to retail partners, according to Sony UK. And they say that the date is not official because they haven't announced anything yet. But, you know, Sony's only official comment on the release date of the PS Vita is actually just in a press release. And they've stated it's going to be released at the end of 2011. So that still pretty much jives with a November 4th date, especially when you consider the holiday season really starts right after Halloween. So it all makes sense. And, you know, we've talked about the PS Vita a little bit in earlier shows. Probably need to see a little bit more as far as software goes. Haha. For us to judge a Sony piece of hardware. Imagine that. We're dry on software, fellas. We're dry on software. But are you guys excited, Peter? What are your thoughts on the PS Vita?
I feel like the more I hear about the confusion about Sony and the PS Vita, the more I think about how Nintendo Wii U is making a turn for the worse each time I hear it. Like, the more and more I hear about it, the more I think it's just going to be an utter disaster. I feel like Sony is just going to at one point be like, on November 3rd, they're going to be like, we are selling the PS Vita tomorrow. Yay. And then it's just, and then there's going to be like some crazy date. I don't know. You still haven't really seen anything that you actually want to play. And it wasn't really that big of a deal at E3 either. I mean, I'm a little worried.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, you know what? The thing is, like, you know, for all the knocking that the 3DS has gotten, because, you know, it's had soft sales, yada, yada. When it was being promoted, at least it had something for us to sink our teeth into, right?
Yeah, so,
like,
exactly.
The 3D, you know, take it, you like it or you don't. It is something for us to, like, talk about and kind of...
It's a definite focal point, for better or worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, here's the stuff that we can play. It's like, here's the stuff that you will get soon. Versus PS Vita's, like, Ridge Racer.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Say, Rob, do you have any handhelds yourself?
Oh, a ton, actually. I have... 3DS is about the only one I don't have at the moment, actually.
Oh, really?
I think there's even an Atari Lynx in the house somewhere.
Nice, my friend. Nice. Yes, my Atari Lynx is actually in my closet. I need to dig it out one of these days and play California games.
Yeah.
Okay, which would be more entertaining than just about any PSP game to date. Also, I might add, it sure feels like the Atari Lynx probably had more titles to date than the PSP. You know what I'm saying? So, okay. So,
Tony Flyers.
Oh, man. I can't wait. I can't wait to pay $500 for a paperweight.
It has a trackpad on the back. You can't beat the track. Really.
It does. Why? We don't know yet. Because
I don't think Sony really knows yet either.
I know. No kidding, right? So Arkham City, another little tidbit. Arkham City is, as we all know, coming out later this year. It's going to be one of the big titles of the year. Big titles. Robin is going to be in Arkham City. Surprise, Suppressa. Also, images of Arkham City Robin have been leaked. I just posted them in the chat. They are very interesting. He's very Arkham Asylum-y, Arkham City-y, by which I mean he's very gritty and real, man, and emo. And I'm sure this is no mistake, but the leaked image is black and white, except for the hardcore red R on his chest. I will put this question to you guys. Looking at Arkham City Robin, have they made Robin look hardcore enough for you to take him seriously?
It needs more Chris O'Donnell.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It looks
and rubber
exactly
nipples?
Like,
does he need
exactly
those?
Like the Chris O'Donnell without the nipples. And,
then he's not my Chris O'Donnell.
Yeah, so those weren't actually on the costume. Chris brought them with him.
Oh, nice. Yes. They're pasties. They're detachable. But yes, actually, now that you've mentioned the lack of, pronounced nipplage, I can't stop looking at it and longing for it.
It's apparently a little warm in
okay.
There.
Well, yeah. So a couple more stories before we get to our topic. Like I said, we like to keep New Soundwave nice and pithy and quick. Poor Sega. Poor Sega.
Uh-oh.
They are the latest victim, as you may have heard, in the hacker, the summer of hacking 2011. So the Sega Pass hack has been upgraded from temporary loss of some service to which we weren't really paying attention to, all the way to reasonably serious business. So in a statement to Reuters, Sega has revealed that the scope of the data breach to their Sega Pass service has reached 1.3 million user accounts, including birthdays, dates of birth, and passwords. Sega made it clear when it initially announced the breach that payment information wasn't at risk. But their spokesperson has said that they are deeply sorry for causing trouble to their customers. They didn't really cause it anyway, and that they want to work on strengthening security. How nice of them to say that. This time, a hacker collective, Lulzsec, is that how we pronounce it? Anyway,
yep.
Lulzsec. Nice. Isn't claiming responsibility. Instead, they are trying to help, or they've offered their help to Sega to find the culprit. Why? Because, like all of us, they have proclaimed their love for Dreamcast, specifically Dreamcast. said, these people
it's
are
the
going
best thing out. Sega ever did.
Isn't that fun? Isn't that hilarious? That, like, you know, we're going to help out because we love the Dreamcast.
These are people after my own heart.
Yes. It's like, you know, Genesis, nah, you know, Saturn, nah, Dreamcast. The Dreamcast. Yeah. Yes, we will do anything for you for the sake of the Dreamcast. Is the Dreamcast, so, okay, so here's a question for you guys. Is the Dreamcast at least easily, like, one of the top three, if not the most, like, positively thought of consoles? I mean, is it the one that has, like, the most positive cult following of any, like, dead system? Because it seems like universal. Like, everybody loves the Dreamcast, even if they've never had a Dreamcast. They've just been trained to, like, love it.
I'd say it's the most recent system with a universally positive following. I mean, people are, you know, basically positive about much older things, the NES, the Super NES, but the Dreamcast is, I think, is just about the newest thing that gets that kind of love.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't really see people longing for their Game Gears.
Yeah, no. But does it have to do with the fact that it's Sega's, like, swan song in terms of being in the console market that people like it? Or
it may also be, too, that it was kind of the underdog against the PS2.
Right. But it's just true. Like, or was it because it was so ahead of its time in terms of, like, the controller and the stuff like that, that people really like it?
I don't know.
Maybe it's just like, maybe it's like potpourri, and it's just all of these things at once, and it's making the memory really favorable.
Right. I will say, like, the Dreamcast had a lot of, like, innovative and kind of weird games for it.
Seaman!
Seaman, and Space Channel 5 Dreamcast, it was, I think, right?
Yeah.
Or was it
Fantasy Star, something like that?
Jet Grind Fantasy Radio, Jet Set Radio, call it what you want. You know, those games were, like, those games were really memorable, really weird. Probably one of the reasons why they weren't completely commercially successful, but they were certainly very memorable.
Yeah, so, and there have been an awful lot of those. There are an awful lot of those that have been ported to other systems since. So
yes,
they couldn't carry a system, but they certainly add, like, great flavor to your library. Maybe that was, like, a lesson that Sega, I guess, you know, it's sad. We'll get into Sega one of these days. We may even devote an episode to Sega again one of these days, just to kind of talk about, they sure gave it a go. They sure deserved better. We've talked about it a little bit, but let's devote a show to it down the road. Okay,
going back to what we were talking about a minute ago, it would be really funny to me if the Sega Pass thing was somehow a result of the PSN breakdown last month.
You mean, how so though? What do you mean? Like, it's just
PSN needs, the PSN failure needs to be responsible for everything bad that happens.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah. Well, clearly. Right.
I just love for this to be able to be traced back to something that came out of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like my flat tire last week, it's PSN's fault.
Right.
Oh, totally.
That's right. It was total, like, security breach on my tire.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, okay, two stories before we get to our big topic. Our big topic for today, I should have teased this earlier, is Duke Nukem. What the fuck? So it is a hot mess. It is a hot mess. There's much to talk about, but I don't think anybody could have predicted this. But before that, so the Redbox rentals have gone nationwide for games. The rental service has expanded to over 20,000 locations. Typically, as we all know, Redbox is just movies, but they have begun offering video games around the nation. And while previously they've tested this in some areas, the expansion actually required an additional 16,000 kiosks with the ability to dish out video games. Adding up the daily amount until, let's see here. So if you're interested in renting games, here's how it works. So the rental process works the same way as with movies. They allow you to keep a title for as long as you want, adding up the daily amount until you reach 25 days, at which point Redbox will charge you $50 to keep the game.
Yeah.
$2 game selection includes decent, but of course limited, selections of games, including, though, recently released titles like Infamous 2, Duke Nukem, And all our favorites around here, I would think. Maybe, probably not. Transformers Dark of the Moon. You can rent that. And if you listen to Radio Free Cybertron, I think you'll agree it sounds like a rental. I'm just going to say. What do you get? Well, Peter was saying on RFC that, Peter, it took you like 10 hours to beat the single player mode.
Less than 10 hours.
Nice. So, yes, rent that sucker. That's all I'm saying. Okay, last story before we get to Duke Nukem. Half-Life Episode 3. When is it coming out? Answer, never. So the Valve boss, Gabe Newell, had delivered his keynote earlier this week at the Games for Change Festival at New York University. And somebody actually asked about Half-Life 2 Episode 3. It's been many years since Episode 2. It's been 4 years exact. And as we all know, Half-Life 2 Episode 2 is beloved. Half-Life 2 in general is beloved. But it's been 4 years since the last game, and so it's about time, right? It feels like they're kind of lagging behind. Before you know it, it's going to be 12 years, right, Duke? So somebody asked him about Episode 3 and when's that coming out. And his answer was, if you know enough to ask the question, you know enough what the answer is. Okay. So that was very, very clear answer. Also, I'd like to point out that at one point they claimed that it was coming out in Christmas 2007.
That wasn't that long ago.
Well, no. I mean, you know, that, I guess, I mean, Christmas 2007 did actually, in fact, happen. So it was like a possibility that it was going to come out. He also spent some time talking about Portal 2, casually mentioning that it's already sold 3 million units, as we mentioned earlier in the show. He didn't specify, like we said, who told him that or had any sources to back that up. But yes, if you're wondering about Half-Life Episode 3, it appears that Valve is still playing games with our hearts and minds, and so we have no idea really when to expect it. What we do know we can expect is a whole lot of S hitting the fan because of Duke Nukem. So guys, there's going to be a lot to talk about here. This is our topic for the week. So let me set the table before we get into this awesome discussion. So, as we all know, Duke Nukem Forever came out after a 12-year slumber. It was in development hell for over a decade, and it finally came out this month to much fanfare and a whole lot of marketing. The problem is, I think we could all expect that after 12 years of hyping and 12 years of the game, frankly, becoming a legend, there's no way it could meet expectations. And we were right. The one thing we didn't expect was Duke Nukem, by just about everybody's perspective and just about everybody's ethical standards, is one of the most offensive things they have ever experienced in their entire life. So before we get into it, here's some excerpts. First of all, I scoured the internets for headlines from mainstream media, and you would get headlines like, Duke Nukem, dark, offensive, appalling, or Duke Nukem, a nightmare for all generations. So I decided, mainstream media has a certain bent. They don't really get toilet jokes. What are the geeks saying? What are the fellow geeks saying? So let me read you some excerpts from Destructoid. Thank you, Destructoid, for the fine article. So, per Destructoid, quote, "They say you should never meet your heroes and you'll only be disappointed. I think the same thing can be said for video games that have accrued over a decade of expectations and hype. If you never play it, at least in your mind, it will always be everything you ever wanted. If you play Duke Nukem Forever, you'll be slapped in the face by reality. The reality of Duke Nukem as a character, as an IP, and as a highly anticipated video game is in stark contrast to the idea of a charming, cool, and hilarious series that years of delusion and marketing have concocted. One level in particular takes place. Oh, by the way, if you've got kids, I'm not joking. If you have kids, put them to bed. So one level of Duke Nukem Forever in particular takes place in an alien nest where Earth's women are being inseminated by giant penises. The women writhe and moan in a fairly humiliating fashion, and they regularly sob with no small amount of implied misery. In essence, they look like they're getting raped. In fact, they are getting raped. And that is the big joke of the level. The aliens are raping the women to create babies. Hilarious. Hilarious, hilarious. Now, you know, I'm a fan of offensive humor, but apparently that was the joke. So, like, painful graphic rape. Funny, haha. By the time Duke Nukem finally makes a you're fucked joke, which he makes, by the way, in front of two women who are about to die in the process of getting sexually assaulted, Duke does not come across as a cool, witty, or likable character. He comes across, quote, as a vile, callous, thoroughly detestable psychopath. Just what we waited 12 years for. And then, before we get into the discussion, last thing. The maker of the game, Take-Two, they had some words for the reviewers and the people who are reacting to the game as they are. Take-Two's CEO, Strauss Zelnick, has defended their right to stand firmly behind anything they release. He said, quote, "When we put something out, I stand behind it and will not compromise. When you put all those things together, it's difficult to be critical of the company. Because here in America, thank God, we have the ability to do what we want. What is there left to be said? I'm sorry. If you don't like it, don't consume it." So he's given a big F you to everybody who has good taste and humanity. Fellas, I don't know how much experience you've had with Duke Nukem Forever, but this is a game that includes now, apparently, first of all, bad gameplay. So the gameplay is bad. You know, when it, apparently the aiming system's bad. The mechanics are bad. The humor is horrible and like apparently not funny. Could we have ever expected this from Duke Nukem? Is this not what we wanted, right?
What was the
not anything I wanted.
What was the previous Duke Nukem like?
Do what now?
What was the previous Duke Nukem game like?
Well, Duke Nukem was it was a lot tamer than if you play it these days, it's probably not offensive at all. It's more funny than anything. It was more, you know, the cops were pigs, like literal pigs, and he was, you know, kind of a super macho man, and he would make jokes about, you know, kicking ass and chewing bubble gum, and you know, you could walk up to a stall and take a leak and hear him, you know, essentially say, you know, "Oh, that was a hell of a piss," that kind of thing. And you would laugh because you were 13 and you would go on your way shooting up more pig cops. But this seems to be kind of cruel and over the top. And so it's interesting to think, you know, between this and, you know, to a lesser extent, things like Mortal Kombat, it seems like we're back in this mode of just more and losing the intent or the spirit of kind of like the humor or the original concept. So, I mean, I don't know what to make of this, guys. I mean, do you guys have any thoughts on this? Because Duke Nukem is... there's no exaggerating it. Based on the game and the reviews and stuff, it's like turned into no short of a disaster, I think, for everybody, because people are literally appalled by the game itself.
Yeah, I think that you know, for 12 years, you would expect that, you know, Gearbox basically purchased the rights from was it 3DO or something, whoever used to do it,
yeah,
for the past 10 years. You would think that they would want to push this game out as much as quickly as they could, just to recuperate anything that they could have possibly lost. And I feel really bad for the poor souls who actually purchased this game, because you kind of knew after 12 years, you knew something bad was wrong. Something was fundamentally wrong with this game, not only was the gameplay itself fundamentally wrong, but the story was fundamentally wrong.
Here's something I've just been curious about. Does anybody happen to know exactly how much of this was finished when Gearbox got a hold of it and how much they did themselves?
That is a great question.
I think they announced the purchase and then they announced the release date. It was within like a year, right?
Yeah, yeah. They turned it really fast.
So they turned it around. So I'm guessing that this game, I'm guessing that 3D Realms, thank you, Golden Vixie, was really, really wanted to hammer these stupid, ridiculously dumb jokes just right. So they wanted it to be as untasteful, you know, like, as possible, instead of it being like, oh, well, maybe we could position this girl this way or something and make Duke Nukem even more of a dick than he already is. And it shows because, you know, Gearbox spent, I'm pretty sure Gearbox spent a lot of money purchasing the rights to this game. And Take-Two spent a lot of money into this game. So he's pretty, you know, when the guy says, oh, I'm sorry that you didn't like it. Really? Like, you knew it was a fundamentally bad game and you still released it because you wanted that to recuperate that money.
Right. By the way, he said we'll see more Duke Nukem later this year. Which I can't.
I'm not really betting on that. But
yeah, I know. I hope not.
Well, at the end of the,
did like say, oh yeah. Well, right now,
at the end of the game, Duke Nukem Forever, they hint at a possible new game. So, yeah. I mean, with the PR firm last week, pretty much saying, you know, you guys have, and you know, Destructoid, their review at first, it's like, oh, the Venom filled reviews, but. You know, they have a point. It's like, who makes their, you know, you can make your character, your protagonist fundamentally flawed. That's fine. But to turn him into a guy that's pretty much like, you know, you're getting raped by aliens. It's fine. It's good to go. Yeah. I'm going to go take a piss now. It'll be fine. Like, it's just not.
Yes.
Duke Nukem Forever was already in your mind like, oh my god, this game is going to be the best because I've been waiting for it. But it got to the point where it hit nostalgia. And want things like
yeah, this absolutely. You know, and the thing is, like, you know, like, so in the chat, Golden Vixie, makes the point that would it have been less bad if it was released 10 years ago? I don't know.
Well, probably not with the rape stuff. No.
Not with the storyline. No.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a question of timing on that. It's just taste.
Toilet Hume is perfectly fine, but when you know you say, "Oh, these girls are getting raped by aliens," you're screwed. I'll see you guys.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know, but that's very distasteful. It's not
right. It's not something that's going to change with how old the game gets either.
Right. Right.
This is always going to be a mistake they've made.
I think people would have forgiven the gameplay, you know, and the long load times because back then, you know, in 12 years ago, you had GoldenEye, right? Which you couldn't jump. Mm-hmm. You had to press 6 buttons to crouch. You know, it wasn't that hard. It wasn't that hard to have a good shooter game back then, you know? And nowadays with all the Halos and the Call of Duties and stuff that you can't really beat them anymore.
Right. And actually, you know, Golden Vixie goes on to say, you know, in the chat that, you know, he was talking a little bit more about gameplay than humor. That I can agree with because apparently the gameplay is archaic in this game and not in a charming way. But it certainly feels like a game that is way past its time. And sure, that would have been probably more well received when games were equally cruddy or, you know, less than accurate.
Yeah. Or back when loading times was not an issue. You know, people would
when we had loading times.
Yeah, people would go and make themselves like a grilled cheese sandwich before they could watch, you know, go play a game. So,
ooh, that sounds good.
And you would say like, hey, I'm loading my game. You know, I'll be right back. You know?
It's like booting a computer back then, right? It's like, oh, I gotta go boot up my computer and
That was your 15-minute break from the game every hour like the book tells you to have.
That's when you went to the can, you know?
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, when I played Rise of the Robots, that son of a bitch loaded for like half an hour.
But it was worth it for the Brian May soundtrack.
Yeah, and I was treated to the worst game ever. when that 30 But what a treat. So yes, interesting, guys. Okay, last question on the Duke Nukem thing before we wrap up the show. It brings up an interesting concept. So the game is so off color and so not a good idea. Like everything about it's so not a good idea. I mean, at what point does a game studio just lose sight of that and just, you know, forges ahead and just, you know, set, it just essentially becomes blind to the fact that they're making a really bad game, a really bad idea? I mean, do you guys think, first of all, do you think that happened? I mean, we're all just speculating here. Do you guys think it was a case where everybody was just so, you know, excited to do a game that was 12 years in the making and also probably, frankly, under the gun to release it, that they forgot or they lost the ability to kind of judge what they were doing? And you know, they just, you know, were innocent, so to speak. They lost the ability to judge it. Or do you think they kind of knew what they were doing and essentially were just bracing for what is happening right now? I mean, what do you think your take is on that?
That is a good question. You know, I think in projects, especially ones go on forever, you reach a certain point where you go, well, I'm committed, and just press forward no matter what you're actually making.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if they expected this when they released it, if they were just in too deep to see what it actually was, or if they knew that they were releasing a piece of crap. It's really hard to say.
Oh, they knew it. Oh, they absolutely knew it. I mean,
you think so?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you've got a QA guys, right? They're just, I mean, unless somebody told them to shut up, these QA guys are like, this game is terrible, you know?
Well, and with years in the development process, for whatever reason, it doesn't really matter about internal shakeups or anything. If you're committed to releasing it, you're going to get tunnel vision. And yeah, you're not going to really care what the playtesters are telling you or what anybody is saying ahead of time about what is actually going into the game. Mm-hmm. You know, you're in the process. You're going to get this done.
I think that it's like, you know, film based video games. They know they're bad, but you know what? They know they're going to get money from it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They know people spend that $60 to get that game, and they're like, they're laughing all their whole way to the bank. Like the Take-Two guy, he's laughing his whole way. He's like, you guys are suckers for buying.
Well, and that's a good point too, because you know, shortly before the game actually came out, amazingly, you know,
regrettably.
they were making a big deal about how your standing reservations and pre-orders would still be honored. So it's like they were trying to get everybody who ever was trying to get in on getting this game still to be locked in so they would get that money before anybody found out they shouldn't buy this.
Absolutely. You know what it's like? It's like essentially movie releases. So, you know, they're just banking. They're doing everything they can to make that day one or that week one release huge. And then when everybody figures out, oh my gosh, this is like the worst thing that has ever crossed my eyes, it's too late because we got your $60. You know what I mean? It's like, it's essentially like a bad action movie. Hello, Dark.
Or Romeo and Juliet.
Yes, or Romeo and Juliet.
Romeo and Juliet.
The second, you know, just most horrible thing.
Or even like The Tourist, right? Which was met with horrendous reviews. Or even most recently, Green Lantern, right? Which was not met with.
Yeah, I need to see Green Lantern, by the way. I've heard not horrible, and I've heard it's so bad. So I need to go decide for myself.
Well, that sounds about like the Fanboy Versus take on it from this weekend.
Oh, terrific. Oh, did you guys, did they review it? I'll have to listen in. By the way, guys, listen to our sister show, Boy Versus. Apparently, they have a Green Lantern review, so go listen to it. Anyway, I think on that note, we're going to wrap up New Soundwave for this week. Like I said, we are a couple weeks away from the revamp of the show. It will be so cool and flashy and spinny. I'll just describe it as that. Very spinny and animated. You will love it. It will also, feel more like a real show. Not to say this isn't a real show. But until then, thank you for listening. Thank you to New Rob, our new Rob. How about that? Thank you for that. You did Boffo.
Oh, glad to be here.
Very nice. For Bweebum, also known as Peter, and XV, I am John DeLuna. We will see you next week for New Soundwave 86, and then New Soundwave 87, which will have that fancy schmancy new look. See you guys.
This has been New Soundwave with your hosts, John DeLuna, Brian Gilby, XV, Lady Rick, Bweebum, with Rob Springer. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Check out all our videos at tfvideo.net. Like the podcast? Tell your friends. New Soundwave is a Radio Free Cybertron production. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.